Good evening. It is so good to see all of you here tonight. Thank you so much for being here. I'd like to thank you for the invitation back. I must not have done too bad the first time. So thanks to you again for having me back. And it's so good to be here. I consider it home away from home. I'm actually here more than I am at home now that I think about it. But it is so good to be here. Let's go back to that verse, Matthew chapter 26, verse 31. Thank you for reading that for us. Matthew chapter 26, verse 31. Let me start my PowerPoint first. There we go. One more time. There we go. Then Jesus said to them, "All of you will be made to stumble because of me this night. For it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered." Now, before we go on, imagine if Jesus were to come here tonight, and he's still where I am right now. Of course, I have to sit down. But he comes in here, and he looks at all of us, and he says, "All of you will betray me tonight. All of you. For the car will betray me. For the pool. All of you are going to betray me." How would that make you feel? You'd be a little personally offended. Wouldn't you? Like, "Lord, I'm not going to betray you." That's the way Peter felt. Let's keep reading. Verse 33. Peter answered and said to him, "Even if all are made to stumble because of you, I will never be made to stumble." Peter said, "Not me, Lord. I'm not going to do it. Never am I going to betray you." Jesus said, verse 34, Jesus said to him, "Assuredly I say to you that this night, Peter, before the rooster crows, before morning, Peter, you will deny me not once, not twice, but three times in a matter of hours." Peter says, "Lord, even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you." And so said all the disciples. I imagine if Jesus were to come here and tell us that, we would say something similar. "Lord, I would not ever deny you." And if we are to have that same emphatic proclamation, let's hope our resolve this morning, this evening, is stronger than that of Peter's on that night. Let's see how the story ends. Let's go over to Luke. Luke chapter 22, verse 54. Luke chapter 22, verse 54. I changed accounts for a reason. And I'll show you at the end. Luke chapter 22, verse 54. "Where he's having arrested him, they led him and brought him into the high priest's house. But Peter had fallen at a distance. Now when they had kindled a fire in the midst of the courtyard and had sat down together, Peter sat among them. And a certain servant girl, seeing him as he sat by the fire, looked intently at him and said, 'This man was also with him.' But he denied him, saying, 'Woman, I do not know him.'" That struck him. Verse 58, "And after a while, another saw him and said, 'You also are of them.' Peter said, 'Man, I am not.'" Strike two. "Then after about an hour had passed, another confidently affirmed, saying, 'Surely this fellow also was with him, for he is a Galilean.' Peter said, 'Man, I do not know what you are saying.' Immediately, while he was still speaking, I love that. While he was still speaking, the rooster crowed. And the Lord turned." Now, this verse only pay attention to. "The Lord turned and looked at Peter. And Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had said to him, 'Before the rooster crows, you would deny me three times.' So Peter went out and wept bitterly." I like this account because of that mental image you get of Jesus being so close to Peter that when he denies him for the third time, he turns and looks. "I told you so. You said you wouldn't, and you did." Here's a recreation of that scene that I found that I really like. You have Jesus, you know, yards away. And he's sitting around the campfire. The rooster crows the third time. The rooster crows the first time after he denied him the third time. And he turns and looks, and there's Jesus. The guilt Peter must have felt. Unbearable. As many of you know, off subject for a minute, as many of you know, I'm majoring in political science at Auburn. And so I'm always watching the news. My mind's always in what's going on congressionally and what the president's doing. So as preparing this list, I couldn't help but think about the Secret Service in this instance. They have taken an oath to defend the president with their life. It's their job that if someone's about to assassinate the president, they're to jump in front of them and give their life so the president can live. Same thing with our men and women in the military. Same thing with law enforcement. Even this morning, a police officer was shot and killed in Birmingham, just down the road. As he approached the scene of a carjacking, I believe is what it was. These people have taken an oath to defend, you know, the president, citizens, people they're supposed to protect overseas, with their life. And that man that died this morning, he fulfilled his oath. He did what he was supposed to do. Him and Peter have nothing in common in this moment. Peter said, "Lord, I will die before I deny you." And he does it three times without even considering anything else. He fell. So that's the story. Peter proclaiming his loyalty to Jesus. Jesus predicting Peter's denial. Peter denying Jesus. And Peter feeling the guilt. He failed to fight for Jesus and claim him. He denied him three times. And when the rooster crowed, he knew his mistake and felt the guilt for it. Now, with time remaining tonight, I would like to look at these observations. So look at some observations of Peter's betrayal and discuss some things we can learn from them. The first thing I'd like us to recognize is that Peter's switch from saying he died for Christ to denying even knowing him, it happened in an instant. A very short period of time transpired between the two events. So the lesson I'd like us to learn is just because we've been faithful for many, many years, what would it be, four in my case, less, more in some others, no matter how long we've been a Christian, we still struggle with living up with living up to what we're supposed to be in the New Testament. A very short period transpired. Peter had, and here's the thing that gets me. Peter had personal time with Jesus. He would sit with the Lord, sat around the table with him, watched him preach. And you would think that after all of that, he would still be able to stand in front of the people who questioned him and say, "No, I was with him. I was there." You would think it would be something he'd be proud of. So the personal time he spent with the Lord was not enough to make him avoid sin. Let's think about Israel. They had so many advantages, and they still failed. Not because they didn't know or they didn't hear. They knew what they were supposed to do, but they didn't apply what they had heard and what they knew. Same with Peter. He was unable to apply what he had learned during the Bible time with Jesus. Another thing I want to talk about is Peter was not immune to sin. And frankly, neither are we. If I can get it to come up, there we go. And neither are we. Romans 3:23, I'm sure we can all quote it. For we have all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Peter changed so rapidly that it shows us that there's not always warning signs that someone's falling away from God. Up until this point, Peter had been a faithful disciple. And even up to hours before the fall, he was telling Jesus, "I will never deny you." I mean, think about Peter. He's the one that, you know, always seems to be putting his foot in the mouth. He's so eager to fight for Jesus. But something happened. Something happened that night that the Peter that we see throughout the New Testament just was not there. The other, this shift reminds me of somewhere else in the Bible. Let's go to Numbers 20. Numbers 20, verse 7. Numbers 20, verse 7. Now the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Take the rod, you and your brother Aaron, gather the congregation together. Speak to the rock before their eyes, and it will yield its water. Thus shall you bring water from them, for them out of the rock, and give drink to the congregation and their animals." So Moses took the rod before the Lord as he commanded, and Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock. And he said to them, "Hear now, you rebels, must we bring water for you out of this rock?" And Moses lifted his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation and their animals drank. And the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, "Because you did not believe me to humble me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore you shall not bring the assembly into the land which I have given to them." Moses never showed any signs before this moment that he would disobey God. He had been through so much hardship for the Lord that you would think that he would know to trust the Lord and to not let his anger get the best of him. It was that pent-up anger that I just mentioned, and his frustration with the whiny nation of Israel that drove him to strike the rock instead of speaking to it. This spur of the moment, emotion-based action, is the same type of action shown by Peter as very dangerous to all of us. I would even bet to say that most, if not all, of our sin is committed in the spur of the moment. Whether it be a burst of anger, lack of judgment, sin can creep into our minds and we are so distracted by worldly emotion that we do not see the danger before us. I appreciate St. Sammy's lesson this morning. His first point ties in perfectly with this part of the lesson. We must stay alert, as Paul says in 1 Corinthians 16:13 that he read this morning. We must give a determined effort to be alert and look out for these moments of weakness that can wiggle into our lives. And I didn't plan on this verse originally being in the PowerPoint, so it's not in there, because I heard it this morning, Sammy put it in there. But 1 Peter 5, verse 8, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. And if Satan truly is indeed like a lion, he found something to eat that night. And that was Peter and his weakness and fear of the persecution he might face if he, of course, did not deny Christ. It's also important to note that Peter never planned on sinning. I don't know why it's not changing. There we go. Peter didn't plan on denying Christ and sinning. He didn't mark the day on his calendar when he was going to deny Jesus. He actually, of course, already mentioned a few hours earlier, declared the exact opposite. We must take note of that so we can remember that sin can hit us when we least suspect it. We must be on a 24/7 lookout for it because temptation will not announce its arrival. Just as Peter was blindsided in the moment, so can we. And we must stay away from situations that could lead us to sin so we can avoid being blindsided. We cannot let the spur of the moment cause us to sin. The only way we can do that is to have strength even in our weakest moments. The Psalms have a lot to say about having strength. Psalms 46, verse 1, for example. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Very present help. Again, in Psalms 22, verse 19. But you, Lord, do not be far from me. You are my strength. Come quickly to help me. Peter needed this kind of strength. Think back to that picture I showed earlier. I won't go back. But think about it. Jesus was right there. Jesus was present. As Psalms, I'll go back. Psalms 46, verse 1, a very present help. Jesus was there with him. He had access to that strength. He refused to tap into it. You are my strength. Come quickly to help me. He was right there, Peter. Jesus was right there, so close to you. He was not far from him, and he failed tapping into that strength that he had access to, that we have access to. And we have to make sure that we do not fall in his mistake and forget who the real Lord is. He was overcome by worldly emotion.
Come on.
There we go. And we must be very wary of reacting to the spur of the moment. As we can see, some of the biggest figures of faith in the Bible struggle with letting human emotion overcome in times of intense anger, jealousy, fear, or in King David's case, lust. We must be able to take a step back from whatever situation is tempting us to act in a sinful manner and resist the urge to give in to human emotion. The next observation we want to look at is found in John 18, 18. Let's turn there. John 18, 18. John 18, verse 18 reads, now the servants and officers who had made a fire of coal stood there, for it was cold, and they warmed themselves. Now, look here. And Peter stood with them and warmed himself. Peter was with the wicked when he denied Christ. He was standing, the same officers that had just taken Jesus away, Peter was standing right there with them. They were gathered around the fire, trying to warm themselves, and there Peter was. And even in that picture I showed a minute ago, you can see the officer on the ground, fireplace, the little fire pit, and he's right there with them. That's really important for us to notice. Because Peter's surroundings betrayed him. Peter was at his weakest when he was surrounded by the wicked. Remember back when he told Jesus he would not deny him, that he would die before he did that? Who was he with? It wasn't with the officers. It's with the disciples, Jesus and the other disciples. But now that he's out in the world, surrounded by those who care nothing about Jesus but to destroy him, he takes a very different stance. This stance is one that is opposite that of Jesus. Brothers and sisters, we must be very careful who we associate ourselves with. It is much easier to proclaim Jesus in the comfort of these four walls than it is in the world amongst evil and sin. Let's look back at Psalms. Let's go to Psalms 1. Psalms 1, verse 1. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the path of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. Let me read that one more time. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the path of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. Peter needed to hear this advice from the psalmist that night. When he betrayed Jesus, he was in the counsel of the ungodly. He was standing in the path of sinners, and he was very literally sitting in the seat of the scornful. We must heed this advice from the psalmist and learn from Peter's mistake and watch who it is we associate ourselves with. We will eventually, like Peter, find ourselves in betrayal the longer we are amongst the wicked. If you remember, every time Peter gave an answer, it was stronger and stronger of a denial. So maybe the longer we're around and more influences, the lower our guard and stance for Christ will be. Every time they asked him, it started out, no, I don't know what you're talking about. No, I did not do it. And then eventually, man, I do not know what you're saying. Every time it got firmer and firmer. Or looser and looser, whichever way you look at it. When we're in those compromising circumstances, what kind of answers do we give? Someone were to offer you a beer. What do you say? You say, I really don't want one. It'll hurt my stomach. Not really feeling it. Or do we say, no, I don't think I should. That goes against what I've been taught. If we're invited to go to a party on a Saturday night, we know we're going to be out really late. Or if we're invited somewhere on Sunday morning, what do we say? I'm busy. I'm feeling kind of bad. My stomach kind of hurting. I can't go. Sorry. Or do we say, no, I have service this Sunday morning. I can't go, but I would love to have you come with me. What kind of answers do we give those kind of questions? So, we must stand firm in our convictions. We must stand firm in our convictions. I have that up there. There we go. But brothers and sisters, I'll tell you this. Those type of questions about our morality, why we don't drink, or why we don't go anywhere else on Sunday morning, or late Saturday night, they're a lot easier to answer if we associate ourselves with righteous people, if we're surrounded by those of like precious faith. Let's look at a couple of verses to help explain this. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33. 1 Corinthians 15, 33. Another one we can probably quote. Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits. And Peter denied Jesus, he was in evil company. They pressured him into an answer that he promised Jesus he would never give. Let's go to 2 Corinthians 6, verse 14, verse 14 through 18. 2 Corinthians 6. Verse 14 through 18. I want you to notice the comparisons here. That's why the big red line. Do not be yoked together with unbelievers. For what do righteousness and wickedness have in common? Righteousness and wickedness. Or what fellowship can light have with darkness? What harmony is there between Christ and the devil? Or what does a believer have in common with an unbeliever? What agreement is there between the temple of God and idols? For we are the temple of the living God. And I'll keep reading. It's not on the PowerPoint. As God has said, I will live with them and walk among them, and I will be their God, and they will be my people. Therefore, come out from them and be separate, says the Lord. Touch no unclean thing, and I will receive you. And I will be a father to you, and you will be my sons and daughters, says the Lord God Almighty. As you can see, this verse draws the line, literal, if I drew it, between what is of God and what is of the world. We have the things that are on the left that are of God. Righteousness, light, Christ, believe, the temple of God. And those things on the right, wickedness, darkness, devil, unbeliever, and idols. You can't be on one side of the line. That's why I drew a big red line. I won't follow that big red line. You can't be on both sides, nor can you straddle the line. Peter tried to straddle the line. Peter tried to keep the morals on this side, while sitting with those on the right. You can't do that. You will slip off and fall to the right every time. Every time. It just doesn't work. Every time we see in the Bible someone trying to appease both sides, they end up falling off. You cannot serve two masters. Where else do we see this? Well, let's go to Romans. Romans 12, verse 2. Romans 12, verse 2 reads, "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God." We cannot be as Peter and sin amongst the evildoers of this world and expect to come out unscathed. This is one of Peter's greatest downfalls, keeping evil company and allowing him to draw him away from the world. We must learn from his mistake and keep away from those who would draw us away from the world. If Peter had stayed with those he was with when he told Jesus he would never deny them, he would have had a better chance of upholding his promise. We too will be able to handle temptation better in the company of those of like precious faith. There's the thought. Let's keep those things in mind. All right, the third thing. Talked a lot this evening about Peter denying the Lord and betraying his trust, but Jesus predicted the betrayal of someone else too. And that man was named Judas. Jesus told Judas a few hours earlier during the Last Supper that he would betray him. Let's go back to that account and read it. Matthew 26, verse 20. Matthew chapter 26, verse 20. When evening had come, he sat down with the 12. Now as they were eating, he said, "Surely I say to you, one of you will betray me." And they were exceedingly sorrowful, and each of them began to say to him, "Lord, is it I?" He answered and said, "He who dipped his hand with me in the dish will betray me. The Son of Man indeed goes just as is written of him, but woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been good for that man if he had not been born." Then Judas, who was betraying him, answered and said, "Rabbi, is it I?" And he said to him, "You have said it." Something like that. Judas didn't even try to deny that he was going to betray Jesus. At least in Peter's case, he was like, "I'm not going to do it, Lord. I'm not going to do it." And Judas is over here like, "Does he know? Like, is it me that you're talking about? Like, I know I did, but do you know that that's going to be me?" And that can give us an indication of how the rest of the story is going to go. Now, let's see how Judas ends up after all this, and see how Peter ends up after all this. We'll start with Judas. We'll go to Matthew chapter 27, verse 3 through 5. Matthew chapter 27, verse 3 through 5. Then Judas, his betrayer, seeing that he had been condemned, was remorseful and brought back the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and elders, saying, "I have sinned by betraying innocent blood." And they said, "What is that to us? You see to it." He threw down the pieces of silver in the temple and departed and went and hanged himself. Judas found out the hard way that there's no undoing sin. Once sin's been committed, you can't undo the sin. You can't take it back. It's kind of like when you talk. Like, "I didn't mean that. I'm sorry. I'll take it back." Well, it's too late. You already said it. You can't get that back. I broke my glasses during finals week a couple weeks ago. And it was quite kind of scary, actually. You know, I have three finals coming up that week, and I put my glasses down on the thing, and they just snapped. Well, I couldn't, as much as I wanted to, I couldn't just put it back together. So I had electrical tape. There's electrical tape on my glasses. There still is. There was no undoing the break, as much as I wanted it to be. It was broken, so I had to put tape on it. This realization for Judas was so painful that his story ends with him taking his own life. Peter, on the other hand, who was able to learn that just because sin cannot be undone, doesn't mean you're lost forever. There's a way to get new glasses. I just got to go to the eye doctor. He was able to find forgiveness and redemption and was brought back into the fold by Jesus as a shepherd. Let's go to John 21, verse 15. John 21, verse 15. "So when they had eaten breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, 'Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these?' He said to him, 'Yes, Lord, you know that I love you.' He said to him, 'Feed my lambs.' He said to him a second time, 'Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me?' He said to him, 'Yes, Lord, you know that I love you.' He said to him, 'Tend my sheep.' He said to him a third time, 'Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me?' Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, 'Do you love me?' And he said to him, 'Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you.' And Jesus said to him, 'Feed my sheep. Most assuredly, I say to you, when you were younger, you girded yourself and walked where you wish. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and another will gird you and carry you where you do not wish. This he spoke, signifying by what death to glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he said to him, "Follow me." Peter was able to make his way back to the Lord, unlike Judas. Peter is also told by Jesus at the end of those verses that his death will glorify God. That when he dies, it will be a good thing for the cause of Christ. It will glorify him. Unlike Judas, whose death marks giving up, not trying to get redemption. Peter would finish his life as a strong servant for the Lord. As we go throughout this year, since we just started, remember that when we sin, the fight's not over. We have a way back. But when we stumble, let's remember Peter and fart our way back to righteousness and not like Judas and stop trying. I am 100% certain that if Judas had gone to Jesus and asked for forgiveness, Jesus would have given it to him. He would have given it to him. But he never asked. He never sought out the forgiveness, and it was never given to him. Let's not give up when we sin, but look at Peter's example and come back from it. One last verse, let's endure. James 1:12. Blessed is the man who endures temptation, for when he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life which the Lord has promised to those who love him. Even though we can seek forgiveness, it's not meaning we should stop trying to resist sin. James tells us we must endure temptation. There it is. So we discussed this evening several ways that we can resist temptation. Being aware of the spur of the moment, choosing our company carefully, and let's remember these things. Now, before we conclude, I guess we'll have to down here. Go back to number 397, I believe. I want to thank Brother Knowles for leading that for me. I asked him to lead that for us. Number 397. Don't worry, we're not going to sing it. Stand up for Jesus. I want to go through these verses and think about these verses in the context of Peter denying Christ and making his way back. Stand up for Jesus, ye soldiers of the cross. Let's hide his royal banner and must not suffer loss. From victory unto victory his army shall he lead, till every foe is vanquished and Christ is Lord indeed. Notice, till every foe is vanquished. We can't, if we're in our younger stages of our time as a Christian, we can't just say, we're too young. I'm too young. I can't do anything. I can't encourage anyone. I can't make a difference. Because you can. And you should at least try. But that also means, till every foe is vanquished, that we can't give up when we're older either. Not that I know. But we can't, in our later stages of life, say, I've done my part. I'm good. I have fought the good fight. I'm done. I'm going to retire. I'm going to sit back and just enjoy life and let all these young people do it. We can't do that. We have to keep fighting till every foe is vanquished. Christ is Lord indeed. Verse 2. Stand up for Jesus, the trumpet call obey. Forth to the mighty conflict, in this his glorious day. Ye that are men now serve him against the numbered foes. Your courage rise with danger, and strength to strength oppose. Stand up for Jesus. Stand in his strength alone. Remember those verses from the Psalms we read about strength? Think about that. In his strength alone. The arm of flesh will fail you. Ye dare not trust your own. The worldly emotion, we cannot allow the worldly emotion to come in our life in the spur of the moment and cause us to sin. We have to control our temper. We have to control our self-control. We have to have strong willpower. And we cannot let that lead us astray. Ye that are men now serve him against unnumbered foes. Your courage rises with things. I already heard that. Put on the gospel armor. Each piece put on with prayer. Where duty calls or danger, be never wanting there. Be never wanting there. Think about that. Be never wanting there. Do not be near the danger when it comes to spiritual matters. Don't be like Peter and think you can sit around the fire with the sinners and be okay. I'm just getting warm. I'm over here because it's cold outside. I'm going to stand over here and get warm. No. Stay cold. It would have been better for Peter if he had, gotten crossfire or something than to be around those people and end up betraying the Lord. Verse 4.
to not stand up for Jesus, the strife will not be long. This day, the noise of battle, the next, the victor's song. The strife will not be long.
I want to talk about that for a minute, too. That means, that can be a good thing or a bad thing. The strife will not be long because one day Jesus is going to return. And we're not going to be here forever fighting temptation. One day we're either going to die or Jesus will return. Those two things will happen. That could be a good thing if you're ready for Him to come back. If you're saying, Lord, come back, I'm ready. I'm good to go. I've been fighting the fight. But it could also mean that if you're not ready, the strife not being long could be a bad thing. We don't know how long we have. We don't. I'll keep reading. To him that overcometh, a crown of life shall be. He with the King of glory shall live eternally. Peter overcame. He overcame and he came back from his sin and was restored and spent many more years fighting for Christ and died a martyr with his death glorifying Christ. Unlike Judas, who died his name forever. When we hear Judas, we think of Judas betraying Christ and being lost forever. If there's anyone here tonight that is not a Christian, please be baptized, remission of your sins. Do not delay. The forgiveness I spoke of just moments ago can only be achieved if you're baptized for the remission of your sins. Don't wait. If you are a Christian and not believing faithfully, make things right before it is eternally too late. The strife is not long. I want to one day hear the words, "Well done, good and faithful servant." I'm sure all of you do too. Do not leave here tonight if there's any doubt in your mind that you'll hear that. If there's any way we can help you, please make the weather firm as we stand, as we think.